This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Next month at the Grammys, the Staple Singers will be honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award. They started performing professionally in 1953, and by the late 50s, the Staple Singers were one of the most popular gospel groups in America. In the early 70s, they crossed over into the pop charts with message songs like Respect Yourself and I'll Take You There. The quartet was led by Pop Staples, and over the years included his son and three daughters. Pop Staples died in 2000. Mavis Staples started performing with the group when she was a teenager. Now she's recording solo and has a new album called Have a Little Faith. Before we listen to a 1989 interview with her, let's hear a song recorded by the Staple Singers in 1968, inspired by Martin Luther King, a friend of the family. It's called The Long Walk to D.C.
It's a long walk to D.C., but I got my walking shoes
on. All the way to Washington.
I can't take a plane, bus or train, 'cause my money ain't that long. America, we believe, oh, that you love us still.
Love us still.
So people, I'm going up yonder.
Yeah.
I spoke with Mavis Staples in 1989 after she released a solo album co-produced by one of her fans, Prince.
What was your family's reaction when you were young to singing secular songs?
That was a no-no. That was a no-no. In fact, Terry, I got the worst switching of my life for singing a blues song. When I was a kid in school, I was going to school down south at that time in Mount Bayou, Mississippi. And on a variety show, you'd hear Ella Johnson on the jukeboxes, you know, Since I Fell for You. And that song, just I liked it, and I would sing it to myself all the time. So doing a variety show, I knew I wanted to sing, and that song was the song that I was singing at the time. And I actually, my grandmother heard about it, and she gave me this nice little switching forward and let me know that, you know, no one had ever said to me, Mavis, don't sing the blues. Mavis, sing gospel songs only. So this was when I found out that, you know, my family was this, and I still didn't know because I was a kid, you know. But that was the first beginning of Mavis knowing that the Staples family would sing gospel.
Now, your father used to play blues before turning to gospel.
He did. Yes, but mostly just around the house or whatever, not actually on stage. Pops was inspired by guys like John Lemon, Blind John Lemon, and Harlan Wolf. So when he first started playing his guitar, that was what he was playing. If you notice, you hear a lot of blues licks in the Staple Singers gospel songs, especially the first things that the first albums that we recorded. Because we had only Pops' guitar. That was the only music we had with us, and maybe a drum beat. But Pops still plays a very bluesy guitar.
It's an electric guitar, too. Is that unusual on the gospel circuit at the time?
Well, it was at that time. In fact, there were no guitars on stage, period.
Was that considered a more devilish instrument?
It certainly was. It certainly was. And Pops had to go to the Bible and let them know. You know, and in fact, I can't quote the exact scripture, Terry, but there is a scripture that it says, we shall rejoice with strings and tambourines. So you have a guitar instrument is a string. And shortly after, you know, when the church people seem to have gotten past it, shortly afterwards, every gospel a singer on the road brought in a guitar, an electric guitar. Pops's was still different. Oh, he had this tremolo on his, you know, and they would call his a nervous guitar. And so, but like I said, shortly after the Staple Singers came with Pops playing his guitar, every group, the Dixie Hummingbirds, the Nightingales, Mighty Clouds of Joy, any group, gospel group that you could name, hired a guitar player.
Well, why don't we hear something from the Staples family?
Okay.
And you're singing lead on this.
Okay.
This is I'm Leaning.
Mm-hmm.
the Staples family with Mavis Staples singing lead. You know, listening to you sing, you can't help but think you could have been Aretha Franklin, if you know what I mean. You could have had a lot of that kind of success as a soul singer.
Yes.
Now, you have had lots and lots of success.
Yes.
But did you ever wish ever that you were singing secular songs and on top of the soul charts all the time, and with all of the fame and everything that comes to it attached with that particular kind of secular success?
No, Terry, I really haven't. I was always happy singing with the family. My head just didn't ever go towards the being a solo artist and being at the top like that. I've had offers when I was a teenager, when I was singing with the family, things like Uncloudy Days. In our first years, I'd been offered millions to record secular music. People like VJ Records made offers, and other labels that were out during that time. But it just didn't appeal to me. And I've never felt that I've lost anything by not doing that. I've always felt that, you know, singing with the family and singing the gospel songs was the best for Mavis. But when I started doing these things in 69 with Sax, this too was to just try myself to see just how this would go, and also to enhance what the family was doing. But I've never even dwelled on getting out there like that.
We're listening to a 1989 interview with Mavis Staples. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. The Staples Singers will be honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award next month at the Grammys. We're listening to a 1989 interview with Mavis Staples.
Tell me how the family started singing together.
Well, we were kids. I guess I may have been about 6 years old. My mother worked nights, and my father worked days. During the day, my mother would keep us, and at night, Pops would keep us. So Daddy was singing with a quartet group at the time, and things weren't going with them. Things weren't going, you know, how you have six or seven guys together. During that time, it's hard for everybody to be, you know, on the same accord and thinking the same. So Pops just decided one night he quit. He couldn't go along with it anymore. And he came home, picked up his guitar, gave each one of us a part. You know, but we were just doing this really to amuse ourselves, Terry, while Pops was babysitting, I suppose. But it was never meant, we were never meant to venture out into making a career of singing.
Well, how did it become a career?
It became a career because we had an aunt, Aunt Katie, one of Daddy's sisters, lived with us. And she heard us rehearsing. She invited us to her church one Sunday. Well, we went out to sing at this church, and we knew one song. The people liked it so much, they clapped us back, and we had to sing that particular song over and over. So Pop said, well, we'll go home and learn some more songs. We recorded Uncloudy Day on a small label called United. And that record, a total gospel record, sold a million, which was unlikely at that time, in 1956. And letters just came from everywhere. Pops, my sisters, my brothers were working. I was still in school. And we were just flooded with these. So Pops said, they thought about it, giving up their jobs and getting out on the road to cover. All of these people wanted to hear us and see us. So we just started, it took off from that particular song, Uncloudy Day.
The Staples Singers were, of course, your family group. But not everybody in your family sang. For instance, your mother wasn't in the group.
No, my mother didn't sing. My mother was the typical housewife and mother. She stayed home and encouraged us. In fact, she was the wheel in the middle of the wheel, the backbone of the Staples Singers. My mother, and she knew she didn't have any. All of our singing abilities come from Pops. My mom could start singing one song, Precious Lord, and before she's finished with that, she sang about 10 songs in there. She gives you a melody. and all out of tune.
When you were a teenager, you were already on the road singing gospel with your family.
Yes.
Whereas a lot of your peers were not with their families. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, when you're a teenager, it's a time usually when people start coming of age sexually.
Oh, yes.
And experimenting with various things.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever feel held back from that? Being on the road with your father in a gospel group?
Uh-huh. No, I didn't, because I was doing what I enjoyed. And when I came home off the road, I hung with my friends. You know, I was the average teenager. I went to dances and skating rinks, bowling, you know, the everything that, and I had my best friends. I had my boyfriend. I'd write if I, you know, during that time, we would only go out maybe 2 weeks at a time. After later years, it got heavier where we would stay out months at a time. But during that time, we wouldn't stay out any longer than 2 weeks, maybe three. And when we came home, I did everything the average teenager would do.
I had
all the fun. I went to my prom. You know, I lived my full teenage life.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And years later, I felt that when I was ready to get married, I was 24 years old when I married, and for a while, let's say I stayed married for about 7 years. So I've had a full life. I singing gospel and being with my family, I've enjoyed every bit of it. My life has been full. I don't regret, you know, any parts of it.
Did you remarry after that first marriage?
No, I didn't. I had kind of a stormy divorce, and I think I kind of, you know, cautioned me into getting married again.
You know what I find interesting about that? You're so associated with a family group,
mm-hmm.
and that you only were married a short time yourself. And
yes. Well, I think mine is because, you know, I was traveling. That had some to do with it. And we were young. My husband was young. At that time, you know, he wasn't quite ready for me leaving home all the time and whatnot, you know, but I wasn't about to stop singing. He never encouraged me to stop singing, but young people in those days, that was a lot for him, you know, for me to be leaving town a lot. And then I kind of married out of the totally, I think maybe I was an entertainment, for an entertainer to marry. I married a mortician.
Oh, really?
So that was really a mismatch, yes. And the first parts of it, the first years of it was nice. But it got to be a bit much, I think, with me leaving town a lot.
Mavis Staples is my guest. Would you describe the church that you grew up in?
I grew up in a Baptist church. Very lively. Where, you know, as soon as the music started, I'd jump up and clap my hands. It was at Mount Eagle Baptist Church. Reverend C.J. Rogers was the pastor then. And I'm still in the same type of environment. I'm at Trinity United Church of Christ now. And we, you know, it's not the sanctified church, but people rejoice in the same way. You know, we have a good time. It's always a good time, church.
In the late 60s, I think it was, the Staple Singers started singing message songs, which
yes.
was a departure from the gospel music. How did you cross over into that?
Well, the message song, actually, we made two transitions. We made one transition first before that message. We went to protest songs. Our first thing was protest songs. That was during the time we were with Dr. King doing the movement. So we'd sing songs like March Up Freedom's Highway and Why Am I Treated So Bad? When Will We Be Paid for the Work We've Done? All right, after we felt that things had gotten a little better, not all the way together, for as far as we were concerned, as far as the black movement went. But after the protest songs, we looked around to see gangs. So we came with Respect Yourself. These are the message songs. Respect yourself. Songs like this.
I want to play something from that period.
Okay.
And this is I'll Take You There, which was a big hit for the Staple Singers. Do you want to say anything about it?
I'll Take You There? No, well, we did this in Muscle Shoals with the Muscle Shoals Alabama guys. Al Bell produced it and wrote it, and I think it's a great song.
The Staple Singers singing I'll Take You There, Mavis Staples singing lead. Mavis Staples is my guest. Most of your message-oriented hits were on Stax Records, and this is a record company that had a lot of soul singers in its roster, and went broke in 1975. What effect did that have on the family group?
Well, we felt bad about it. We felt that, you know, because this was another black company after Motown, and it certainly crushed us to see that it was lost. But we had to move on. In fact, we went with Warner Brothers after those days, but we certainly felt bad about it.
One last question. On the album jacket, Time Waits for No One, the one produced by Prince?
Yes.
It's a fairly sexy cover, you know?
Yes.
Are you comfortable with
and
that
I'm
image?
Still sexy, too.
Yeah, I know. I'm just wondering if you're comfortable with presenting that kind of sexy image.
Oh, yes,
image.
Yes. That's a part of me.
Okay.
You know, people have a tendency to think that you sing gospel songs and you're an evangelist. You know, or you wear a robe all the time. You walk around with a halo. But no, I'm a woman. And I try to show myself as a woman as much as the next woman. You know, so, like I say, you're going to see a lot more of Mavis's personality. There are a lot of little Mavis's off in here, you know. And in this album, Prince is letting it be, no, he grabbed a whole lot of them.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about your music and your life. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Terry.
Mavis Staples recorded in 1989. Her new CD is called Have a Little Faith. On February 13th, the Staples Singers will be honored with a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Grammys. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.